Hello and welcome once again to canonblogger.com. You're listening to episode number 57. This week I'm going to be talking to you about gadgets, tips, tricks, and a whole bunch of tech talk. So thanks for tuning in, and here comes your weekly podcast. So this week I'm going to be talking to you about gadgets, tech, and a whole lot of tech stuff. So if you're not interested in the technical side of photography, you might want to postpone your listening to next week's episode, which will probably be decidedly less technical in nature. But I did want to take care of a few questions and answers today, which are necessarily kind of technical, and a few other technical tips and tricks that some people may be interested in. Two episodes ago, I gave a little primer on the different ways to fire your flashes wirelessly and told you at the end of that episode that I was going to be pursuing some cactus triggers sold by the website gadgetinfinity.com. Well, those cactus triggers have since arrived, and I discovered that the versions that I ordered are the ones that are used for strobes and do not work natively with shoe mount flashes. So to that effect, if you do order the Gadget Infinity Cactus Triggers, make sure you get the ones that are appropriate to your lighting. Now, I did actually happen to inherit some monolights from Smith Victor, so I was able to effectively put these triggers into use immediately. But if you don't have both sets of lights, hot shoe and monolights or strobe lights, studio lights, you won't be able to use them if you order the wrong kind. So make sure you get the kind that are appropriate for your flashes. What you can do, though, is if you do happen to order the wrong kind, like I initially did, is you can actually get a converter. And if you ordered for the strobe lights or studio lights and you actually have hot shoe flashes, there's a simple converter kit that you can get, also from Gadget Infinity. Many local camera stores may have them. Your Radio Shack might have a little converter cable here. Could require a little soldering on your part if you're technically handy. But you can get these from Gadget Infinity and several other websites for around $15 per cable. So there are converters available if you wanted to add on to it. But the preferred route to go would be to actually get a dedicated shoe mount connector. Gadget Infinity also sells these made by Cactus. So that is going to be a route I go to enable the ability to fire both studio lights as well as hot shoe lights. Now, there is some question as to whether or not the 16-channel triggers that I purchased will fire a 4-channel receiver for the shoe mount flashes, but that's a little experiment I'm willing to take because the cost of these is so low comparative to the other types of wireless lighting options that are out there. These are roughly anywhere between 20 to actually 30 bucks a piece, depending on the system that you're going with. So that's a little update for you on my lighting trials and tribulations. Moving on, the next thing I want to talk about today is something I heard over on the Photoshop User TV video podcast series. Many of us know about Photoshop User TV. Got some pretty world famous people over there, Scott Kelby, Dave Cross, and Matt Kleskowski, all instructors for the National Association of Photoshop Professionals, or NAPP, N-A-P-P, of which I am a member. And one of the things that came up in there was a tip that Dave Cross gave about patterns that you can import in that are generated on the CS3 CD for Adobe Illustrator. And it's kind of cool because you can pull these Adobe Illustrator files into Photoshop and use them as patterns or backgrounds in your digital compositing work, or if you're building up a multi-layered image and you'd like to have a repeating pattern, these Adobe Illustrator patterns are available and you can just open them inside of Photoshop. So you don't have to have Illustrator to use these. It's really cool and there's a lot of really neat ones in there. So if you're running Windows, which is what I'm running my CS3 on, so it will be different for those running Mac, but if you're running Windows, you can find that in the C drive or whatever drive you've installed your programs to. It'll be C, Program Files, Adobe Photoshop CS3, Presets, Patterns, and then PostScript Patterns. So that's a pretty lengthy set of folders to drill through. I'll go ahead and post that on the blog at the end of today's episode as well. But there's just some really cool Illustrator files in there, and it was an awesome tip from Dave, so I thought I'd share that here as well. So that gets a little more technical there. Moving along to more of a personal issue, I'd like to also take a minute to say thank you to all the listeners and readers who voted for my photo in the recent photo contest sponsored by This Week in Photography, or TWIP. Their theme was yellow. They had over 500 photos that were submitted, I think 522 total. Just some really great photos there. I don't think I won. I don't know. Their results haven't been posted yet. But based on the number of votes I got, I finished in fifth place. So I guess out of 522, that's not too bad. But I did only have 20 votes, and first place had over 60. And second place had, I think, just over 60, or 65 and 62 or something like that. So I'm pretty far behind in the running there. So probably did not win, but I did want to take a moment to say thank you to all the listeners and readers that took the time to go over to Photrade, register, and then vote for my picture. I really appreciate the effort, even though in the long run it looks like I probably will not be the winner of that Drobo. So unfortunately I'll probably have to go out and buy one on my own. So moving on in the podcast, I'd like to take the time to answer a couple reader questions. I've gotten a fair number of these over the past couple weeks, and wanted to address a couple of them here inside the podcast to kind of let these people know thank you for sharing your questions with me, and I'm more than happy to answer the ones that I'm able. For those of you who have submitted questions or shared comments on the blog where I haven't been able to personally answer them, hopefully I've been able to refer you to other resources that have the answers that you're looking for. But today I've got three questions. The first one of these comes from Joseph. I'm sorry I don't remember where you're from. Given from the spelling of his name, I'm guessing it's overseas. But the questions he asked me pertain to the podcasts. And as many of you know, before I switched over to the audio format, I had also done a lot of video podcasts here at Canon Blogger. And his question was basically asking what software I've been using to record my podcasts. And it ties in again to depending on the nature of what I'm recording and putting it on the blog. But if I have been recording video, I've primarily been using Camtasia on Windows. It's a fairly pricey piece of software, but it really does an excellent job. You can download a trial of that or even purchase it over at techsmith.com. Very good quality software, comes highly recommended. It's probably the best thing out there for the Windows side. On the Mac side, I have done a couple video podcasts where I've actually recorded myself, and I used QuickTime for that on the Mac. That's also an excellent program, especially if you're doing webcam-type recordings. And it's not as good for screencasts, though, because you would need to have two computers, and the image quality really isn't that great, not as good as it is in Camtasia. Unfortunately, Camtasia does not have a version for Macintosh, so there's some other options out there for Mac screencast recording. I can get that information to Joseph if you'd like, but from what I understood, he was running Windows, so it really wasn't relevant. If anyone else does have suggestions for video screencast software solutions on the Mac, feel free to share those over in the comments on the blog or with me via email. As far as recording audio podcasts, I have been using for quite some time now this software program called Audacity, A-U-D-A-C-I-T-Y, Audacity. It's an excellent, excellent program, does great quality. You can do fade-ins, fade-outs, you can add music, as you know from this podcast. And the best thing about it is that it's free. It's one of those open source projects that you can see out in the community of the internet. Just Google Audacity and you can find a link off of SourceForge to download and install it. And the best part is that it is free because it's part of that community. So that's also a highly recommended piece of software. So thank you to Joseph for writing in actually and asking about that. Hopefully that gave you a couple directions to go for whatever your efforts are trying to accomplish. My second question today comes from Sarah. She wrote in and she asked what crop factor should she be using to figure focal lengths on her camera gear. And I want to say thank you to Sarah also for writing in, but to answer your question requires a little bit more detail because different camera vendors will have different crop factors depending on the size of their sensor. And that's primarily what brings up the term crop factor, because in essence what you're doing is you're taking this aperture or this opening and your sensor can only capture a portion of that, so it's cropping it down, so you're only getting a portion of that. So when you have a 50 millimeter lens, what you're really looking at through your viewfinder is only a portion of that 50 millimeter width, and in determining how much is being cropped off of the edges on the top, bottom, left, and right, you can see that if you zoom this lens on a full frame, based on a 35 millimeter size film frame, if you zoom it out to where it encompasses just that much, you'll notice that that has roughly a crop factor of 1.3, 1.5, 1.6, whatever, depending on the camera make. Now, for Canon's full frame, I think they're really close to 1:1, but not quite. I think they have a 1.3 crop factor on their 5D. It's real close to a 1:1 crop, but it's not exactly a full frame. It's the closest thing to a full frame in the Canon lens lineup, without going into the ProGrade 1D Mark IIs. So the 5D is a 1.3. If you're shooting the Nikon APS sensors, I think those are 1.5. And on the Canon APS-C sensors, those have a crop factor of 1.6. And what you use to what you use these for is you take the focal length or the aperture size of your lens, whether it's a 50 millimeter lens, a 70 millimeter lens, that's the measure of the opening. So if you take that measure of the opening and then multiply it by the crop factor, that's the effective opening or length that you are zooming to. So on a 50 millimeter lens for Canon, you actually are shooting at the equivalent of a full frame 75 millimeter. And excuse me, that'd be for Nikon. And then the Canon would be slightly more than that. So it's almost 80 millimeters there. And then for the Canon full frame, it's probably about 60. I haven't done the math on that. But you take that crop factor number, the 1.3, 1.5, or 1.6, and multiply it by the length of your lens, whether it's a 50 millimeter, 70 millimeter, 120, whatever. You can use your crop factor to determine its actual full frame equivalent. So that hopefully will answer your question, Sarah. It really is a function of what camera system you're using, whether it's a full-frame Canon, an APS size Canon, or an APS size Nikon, because they do all have different crop factors. So for the third and final question today, I'm going to answer one that Eric wrote it on. And his question basically said, I'll just read this off. I've heard the terms plane of focus or plane of view, field of view, and depth of view used a lot, and I'm totally confused. Can you please clarify? Love the blog. Thanks, Eric. Well, Eric, to answer your question, there are a couple different ways I could go about this. So let me just give you a brief definition or explanation of what each of these is and how they're different from one another. So if you were to look at plane of view, the plane of view refers to everything that is on a plane that goes straight from your eye out, so out away from you. And that's going to be your plane of view. So if you're looking straight out at 12 o'clock, that's going to be your plane of view. And that's different from your field of view, because the field of view is defined by how wide you can see. So when you're looking through your camera lens, it's not how far out you can see, but how wide to your left and to your right you can see. And that's going to be your field of view. So your plane of view and your field of view are different. Your plane of view kind of refers to everything within your plane of focus or plane of view. So anything on that plane will be in focus. Whereas your field of view refers to the expanse of what you can see. And then the third portion of that, the depth of field that you referenced, refers to the range of sharpness that you will see within your plane of view. So if you're looking straight down at the ground and you have a flower and then underneath that is a leaf and then underneath that is another branch and then underneath that is the sidewalk, your depth of field, then that's going to be whatever setting your aperture is set to, that will determine how much of what you're looking at will be in focus. And the larger your aperture, and a larger aperture means you're going to have a smaller number. So a 2.8 is pretty wide open. It's a large aperture versus a small aperture like f8, f16, f22. That's going to be a lot smaller. And a larger aperture will give you a shallower depth of field, whereas a smaller aperture or a tighter or higher numbered aperture will give you a wider depth of field. More will appear in focus from the front to rear of your focal range. and you will have a varied focal range depending on a number of factors. Number one, of course, what your aperture is set to. Number two will also be the quality of the lens that you use. And if you want a wide depth of field, you're going to want to have a very small aperture opening. F8, F11, F16, F22 will give you the widest possible depth of field. And that will go from the very closest point to where you have critical sharpness to the furthest point where you have critical sharpness. If there's any question into your mind as to how to get the most depth of field, put your camera aperture setting on F11 or higher, and then focus, put your focusing point on the closest thing to you that you can, because your depth of field will extend more out from you than it will toward you. Anything closer than your closest focusing point will usually be blurred. So if you want to, and conversely, if you want to have everything blurred outside your area of focus, you're going to want to have a lot wider or a lot larger opening of your aperture. So you want to be down in the f3.5, f2.8, 1.4 nature. Those are the ranges where you'll get a much shallower depth of field, where there's only going to be a little bit of whatever you're focusing on in focus, and that'll be from the closest point to you to further away from you. And that also brings into play that degree of sharpness that you'll see on your photography. So hopefully that will give a little bit of clarification to Eric. Thank you very much for writing in. I would like to thank everyone actually for writing in, Joseph, Sarah, Eric, and others that I've written to back that I didn't get a chance to address inside the podcast. If you do have comments for the show and would like to have your questions answered on a future podcast, please feel free to email me. The address, as always, there is jason@canonblogger.com. Just a couple other things I'd like to go through here in my wrap-up. First is I've got a road tip for you. It's kind of a little bit different from a road trip because you're not really going here. But a road tip, one to really get you on the road towards next week, is to take a look inside Photoshop. A little keyboard shortcut for you is the camera and the apostrophe combination. And I really get a lot of use out of that, because what that does is that can toggle on and off your grid view. And what I've done with my grid inside of Photoshop is I've set that to 33.33%, and then said only one grid will show in my monitor. And basically what that gives me is a rule of thirds grid. So when I toggle that control and apostrophe, that'll throw up a rule of thirds grid for me, so I can look at my image to see if it matches with the rule of thirds, so I can put and position and crop and move my pictures around so that I've got important points of focus sitting at or near one of the rule of thirds hot points. So control apostrophe will do that for you, and you can toggle that on and off. Do it once and it'll bring it on, do it again and it'll turn it back off, just like a light switch, on and off. Pretty neat little trip there, or tip there. The last two things I wanted to mention were the latest poll that's up over at the blog. So do stop in and vote on the latest poll. The question is, do photo contests have to have prizes to interest you? I'd love to hear your thoughts in the blog, so do feel free to share your thoughts on any of the blog posts that I put out there daily. You can also share them over at vizu.com. There's an area there to share your comments as well. But do step over to the blog and make sure you participate in that latest poll. And last but not least, I also have up on the blog with today's podcast is this week's edition of What's This? I think we're now in our 18th episode of What's This? I've got an image, or a crop, I should say, of an image up on the blog, and I'm challenging you to see if you can figure out what the larger version is. So do stop into the blog, take a gander, and take a guess. And if you don't guess, you can't win. And if you don't win, then that means you can't get bragging rights on the CB Image Guessing Contest. So that's it for this week. I do try to keep these at or under 20 minutes, and I'm getting pretty close. So I'll go ahead and sign out now. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any ideas, suggestions, comments, or feedback, please feel free to email me. The address, as always, is jason@canonblogger.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you back here next week. Bye.